Mr. Deputy Speaker, never has the gap between the Chancellor's rhetoric and the reality of people's lives been greater than it was today. This is a budget people won't believe from a government that's not on their side. Because of their record, because of their instincts, because of their plans for the future, and because of a budget, most extraordinarily, that had no mention of investment in our National Health Service and our vital public services. It's a budget people won't believe from a government they don't trust. And this Chancellor has failed the working families of Britain. For the first time since the 1920s, people are earning less at the end of a government than they were at the beginning.
Order. Quite rightly, I expected the Chancellor to be heard. And I certainly expect the same courtesies to be given to the Leader of the Opposition, Ed Miliband.
People are £1,600 a year worse off. The next generation has seen wages plummet and tuition fees treble. They've built fewer homes than at any time for nearly 100 years. And it's certainly not, Mr. Deputy Speaker, a truly national recovery when there are more zero-hours contracts than the population of Glasgow, Leeds and Cardiff combined. That is the reality of the lives of working people. These are the facts. These are the inconvenient truths of his record. It's a recovery for the few from a government of the few. And Mr. Deputy Speaker, he chose to make a number of references to me today. Let me just tell him, Mr. Deputy Speaker, we're not going to take lessons on fairness from the Trust Fund Chancellor and the Bullingdon Club Prime Minister. And not for the first time. This is a budget from this Chancellor that simply won't be believed. We support the change on the personal allowance, but on tax, he gives with one hand and he takes far more away with the other. Mr. Deputy Speaker, nobody believes this Chancellor when he says he's going to cut their taxes, because that's not what's happened. Not only are wages down by £1,600, but taxes are up. 24 tax rises. Families worse off as a result of his measures, on average, by £1,127 a year, the equivalent of 8p on the basic rate of income tax. That is the reality behind a budget that cannot be believed. And everyone knows what's coming if they were to get back: another rise in VAT. The tax the Tories love to raise. And of course, Mr. Deputy Speaker, in the finest Tory tradition, what's the lesson? Deny it before an election and then jack up VAT afterwards. Now on living standards, which the Chancellor made much of in his speech. The Chancellor knows that on the official measure from the ONS, people are clearly worse off under him. So he's had a bright idea, Mr. Deputy Speaker, to invent a new measure of living standards to prove that, in fact, what people know in their wallets and their pockets somehow isn't true. But, Mr. Deputy Speaker, people don't need a new measure which pretends they're better off. They need a new government to make them better off. That's the reality behind a budget that can't be believed. Now, what about low pay? What about low pay? Again, he talked about it in his speech, Mr. Deputy Speaker. The Chancellor poses today as the friend of the low paid. I mean, you couldn't make it up, Mr. Deputy Speaker. But
it's a little too much noise coming in the back row. Mr. Shelbrooke, just because you've moved positions doesn't mean to say I do not see you. The last thing I need from you is to explode. It will neither be good for you nor the Chamber. Ed Miliband.
I'm bound to ask, Mr. Deputy Speaker, whatever did happen to the promise of a £7 minimum wage this year? But the Chancellor made much of it 18 months ago. He was going to have a £7 minimum wage, and he has broken that promise. And the idea of this Chancellor of the Exchequer boasting about a 20p rise in the minimum wage, expecting low-paid workers to be grateful, that is the reality behind a budget that cannot be believed. And of course, Mr. Deputy Speaker, he doesn't just now claim to be a friend of the low paid. He claims to be a friend of the North.
out.
Odd, I'm not going to keep saying that I want to hear the Leader of the Opposition. I expect everybody to hear the Leader of the Opposition.
Now, on the specifics, we're pleased he's adopted our policy of 100% business rates, being councils being able to keep it. But I've got to ask, why doesn't he do it for every council right across the country? Why is he just doing one? And let's talk about... Oh, he's done two, says the Chief Secretary, helpfully there. I mean, isn't it great, the Liberal Democrats locked in the boot of the Conservative Party? Now, let's talk about what he's done to the north of England. Let's really test him out on whether he's a friend of the north. 75% bigger cuts to local government budgets in the north than the rest of the country. In the northwest, 400,000 working families have seen their tax credits cut. That's more than any other region. In the northeast, he's spending £1 on transport for every £25 he spends in London. Now he spent time in his speech praising northern councils. Well, let's see what the northern councils have to say about him. Because he talked about Leeds. This is what the leader of Leeds has said. The Chancellor... Labour! Yeah, but he was praising them in his statement. Let's see what they have to say. He says, The Chancellor fails to deliver the devolution we need. This government is no friend of the North. Now, Mr Deputy Speaker, for the interest...
Order. Shoestick's getting out of hand. It doesn't... Just a moment. You can shout all day. I've already looked at Mr Hands. He may hide behind Sir Tony, but we all know where he is. His voice may carry, but I know where he's sat. So much as the Tony may move, I recognise it. So I don't need any more help. All I will say to the government benches is, let us listen, let's get to the end. Because as I said earlier, we have our constituents that wants to hear what both sides wish to say. Ed Miliband.
And this, Mr Deputy Speaker, is what Joe Anderson, the Mayor of Liverpool, said. The Chancellor has bludgeoned Liverpool. We've had 58% of our funding taken away. Even Dick Turpin had the decency to wear a mask when he robbed people. That's what he thinks of the Chancellor. Now they say, why don't I quote Conservative leaders? Well, Mr Deputy Speaker, for the interest of balance, I would have liked to quote a Conservative leader of a northern city, but there aren't any. And with these two in charge, there never will be. Now, on tax avoidance, the gap... He talked about tax avoidance in his statement. But the gap between what is owed and what is collected is up, not down. And no wonder. He hasn't acted on tax havens, despite the Prime Minister's promises. He didn't act on HSBC. In fact, he appointed the chairman as a minister. And what about hedge funds, Mr Deputy Speaker? Strangely absent from the Chancellor's statement. Where was the action on stamp duty avoidance? It's costing well over £1 billion a year. Of course, they can't act on hedge funds because they bankroll the Tory party. He can't act because they own him lock, stock and barrel. And the Conservative Party is now just the political wing of the tax avoidance industry. But of course, Mr Deputy Speaker, the biggest sleight of hand of all is on the deficit. Because I think the Chancellor was doing a bit of rewriting of history today. Five years ago, what did the Prime Minister say? He said, we will balance the books in 5 years. No ifs, no buts, no maybes, just like the immigration pledge. Now today the Chancellor comes along to boast that he's halved the deficit. But that's not what the Prime Minister used to say about halving the deficit. he said it would be completely inadequate. So let me get this straight, Mr. Deputy Speaker. It's gone from completely inadequate to a great triumph. I don't think that's going to wash with people, Mr. Deputy Speaker. The only thing long-term about his plan is it will take nearly twice as long to balance the books. And it can't be believed, Mr. Deputy Speaker.
Mr. Rance. I've said earlier, please, a little more control. Emma Laband.
And it can't be believed, Mr. Deputy Speaker, because we've heard it all before. 5 years of promising a recovery for all, 5 years of delivering a recovery for the few. And now he asks us to believe it all over again. And, of course, the most unbelievable thing of all is their claim we're all in it together. They say yes to the bedroom tax, no to the mansion tax. Food banks on the rise, bank bonuses in their billions, taxes up for working families, taxes cut for millionaires. The best thing you can say about the Chancellor and the Prime Minister is that when the removal vans turn up, they will be in it together. And his failure, and Mr. Deputy Speaker, his failure on living standards, on tax, on the deficit, are actually all linked. It's because our economy is too unproductive, too unbalanced, and too insecure. There are some things that he didn't mention in his statement today. Our productivity gap with the rest of the G7 is now the worst for a quarter of a century on his watch. He talked again today about the rebalancing, but the rebalancing he promised hasn't happened. The Chancellor's target for exports is set to be missed by over £300 billion. And on this budget's figures, he's actually overseen the slowest recovery for 100 years. That is the reality behind the budget that cannot be believed. And for all of the window dressing today, they can't tackle insecurity at work because they think that's how we compete. They can't make work pay because they believe low pay is the way that we succeed. And they can't build an economy for working families because they think wealth flows from the top. Mr. Deputy Speaker, not for the first time, the chairman of the Conservative Party perfectly summed up Tory philosophy in his celebrated handbook, Stinking Rich 3. Mr. Deputy Speaker, I'm not sure what happened to Stinking Rich 1 and 2. Now the Chancellor announced a number of measures on savings, and I think it's very, very important that we look at the detail of these changes. We do want people to have more flexibility, including on annuities. I do say to the Chancellor, he talked about advice in the annuity market. It's incredibly important that advice happens quickly, because we've got rip-off merchants ready to pounce. We know it's happened before. We know it's happened. We know. No, no. We.
Mr. Williamson, you're this side of Mr. Baldry. I see you very easily. Thank you. Ed Miliband.
Well, but Mr. Deputy Speaker, this is a very serious issue because we know it has happened before. It happened in the 1980s, a dreadful mis-selling scandal, and the Chancellor needs to get proper regulation in place on these issues. But we will look at the changes that he has talked about. Now the glaring omission from this budget statement, Mr. Deputy Speaker, was the National Health Service and public spending. I mean, it was a completely extraordinary admission. Where was that discussion of the National Health Service and investment in public services? I think it's time, Mr. Deputy Speaker, we looked at the reality of this government's spending plans, because this is the budget that can't be believed. And he doesn't want you to know it, Mr. Deputy Speaker, but he had an extreme spending plan yesterday, and he has an extreme spending plan today. It's here in the Red Book, in black and white, on page 69. It shows his plan for extreme cuts in the next Parliament. Table 2.4 of the Red Book shows he's trying to hide big cuts between 2016 and 2018. So let me tell the House what the Chancellor tried to hide. His plans offer at least as many cuts in the next Parliament as this one. And actually, the pace of cuts in the next few years is actually faster than the cuts in the last few years. So Here's the thing, Mr. Deputy Speaker, and I think it's very important the country knows this. He came along today to try and suggest that the pain was over. But if they get back, it isn't. Their failure on the deficit means they are planning massive cuts in the next Parliament, billions of pounds of cuts in the next Parliament. And you might ask, Mr. Deputy Speaker, what's the evidence for it? There's a lot of evidence. Let's start with what the Prime Minister said in his education speech. The Prime Minister came along in his education speech and he said they were going to cut the early years, they were going to cut schools, they were going to cut colleges, cuts in education spending. Mr. Deputy Speaker, shortchanging education today means we cannot build a recovery for all tomorrow. And it's most worrying of all on the National Health Service. Because, you see, because of these huge cuts that they've announced, and all of the members opposite will have to go and justify this to their constituents, because of the massive cuts they've announced, it means there'll be colossal cuts planned, and I emphasise planned, in defence, in policing, in local government. But they won't be able to deliver those cuts, so they'll end up cutting the National Health Service. That is the secret plan that dare not speak its name today. And he didn't tell us. You can tell they're really worried about it, Mr. Deputy Speaker. They're worried about it. And the Chancellor didn't tell us that his plans also continue massive cuts to social care.
Yes. I think the Defence Minister and myself don't want to fall out. If there's some letters to sign on her desk, it might be better if she can't keep quiet.
And they didn't tell us that, of course, their plans involve massive cuts to social care as well. We've already in this Parliament seen hundreds of thousands fewer elderly people being cared for. And what is the lesson, Mr. Deputy Speaker? If you devastate social care, you betray the elderly and you pile unsustainable pressure on our National Health Service. And these two are coming along and promising more of the same. That's why they can't be trusted on the National Health Service. Mr. Deputy Speaker, building a truly national recovery needs a new government. We won't sit by while people are on 0 hours contracts month after month, year after year. Instead, we will legislate for a new principle that if you do regular hours, you get a regular contract. He talked about the minimum wage in his statement. Let's talk about what's happened on the minimum wage.
Mr. Williamson, be helpful to the chamber, or I will be unhelpful to you, and I don't want to get to that stage. Right, Honourable Miliband.
The minimum wage has gone up by just 70 pence in this Parliament. A Labour government will raise it by more than double that to a minimum wage of more than £8 an hour. And we will have a real industrial policy. The Chancellor has been a particularly malign influence in this government on climate change, because the Prime Minister used to claim that he believed in climate change. I mean, it is extraordinary, I have to say, Mr. Deputy Speaker, even by his standards, to put a wind turbine on your roof and then want a moratorium on wind turbines. I know he's a stranger to consistency, but even by his standards, that's going some. But we will end the dabbling with climate change denial, have a proper green investment bank. And yes, Mr. Deputy Speaker, a Labour government will support the young, not make them pay the price of hard times. We'll ensure that every major government contract will guarantee apprenticeships. And yes, Mr. Deputy Speaker, we will cut tuition fees to £6,000 to reduce the burden of debt on young people. And let the Deputy Prime Minister defend his broken promises on the doorstep. And all of this will be underpinned by a balanced plan that cuts the deficit every year, protects education and health, and has fairer taxes. And Mr. Speaker, yeah, I do believe in a progressive tax system, reversing his millionaires' tax cut. A mansion tax to fund the NHS, and abolishing the vindictive, unfair bedroom tax that he imposed. That is what a Labour budget would do from a Labour government that knows Britain only succeeds when working families succeed. And now, Mr. Deputy Speaker, we know the choice at the election. We've seen 5 years of falling living standards. young people paying the price of hard times, and NHS going backwards. This budget didn't solve the problems facing working families. It confirmed them. Britain needs a better plan, a plan for working families. Britain needs a Labour government.